See You at the Top is the program that gives a checkup from the neck up to eliminate stinkin' thinking and avoid hardening of the attitudes. This recording will give you instructions on how to change the way you think about yourself and your surroundings. This is the way to change your performance, which you must do in order to gain additional rewards. Zig Ziglar's message deals in principles and procedures and is beneficial to people from all walks of life. It is positive thinking with solid reasons for believing you can and should succeed in all areas of life. Zig stresses the importance of honesty, loyalty, faith, character, and integrity if you expect to reap all the benefits life has to offer. Mr. Ziglar teaches that while there is no free lunch, you do not pay the price for success, you enjoy the price of success. Zig Ziglar is an internationally renowned speaker and authority on high-level performance. His I Can course is taught in more than 3,000 schools, and hundreds of companies and businesses utilize his tapes, books, and videos to train their employees effectively. And now, let's join Zig Ziglar at his best, in front of a live audience.
One of my favorite stories, talking about attitude, has to do with an incident that took place a number of years ago on a railroad. It was a brutally hot day, and some laborers were working out on the tracks, and a private car, as part of the train, pulled up and pulled off over on the siding. So a window came up, and a loud voice boomed out, "Dave! Hey, Dave Anderson, is that you?" And one of the laborers looked up and said, "Yeah, Jim, it sure is." And he said, "Well, why don't you come on in? I'd like to talk to you a little while." Well, old Dave was delighted to get out of that hot sun into the air-conditioned comfort of that beautiful private railroad car that was there. So he went in. They visited about an hour, and then they, you know, warmly passed the time of day. And as they were leaving, they embraced, as old friends are inclined to do. And old Dave went back out to work. Well, the crew out there said, "Hey, Dave, isn't that Jim Murphy, the president of the railroad?" And Dave said, "Yep, sure is. Been friends for over 25 years. And he said, "Well, how in the world did you happen to know the president of the railroad?" "Well, Dave said, old Jim and I went to work the same day on this railroad." And they said, "Man, how does it happen then that you're still out here working in the hot sun and Jim Murphy is the president of the railroad?" Well, he said, "It's very simple to explain if you think about it. When I started to work for this railroad, I went to work for $3.50 an hour. But Jim Murphy went to work for the railroad." There's your difference, you see. There's your difference. I'm really talking about an attitude. You see, competition, as you know, in the game of life, is powerful tough for about 40 hours a week. Now, after that, competition dramatically drops. And you're going to see the people who really go to the top, the people who do things with their life, are the people who go beyond what the average man or woman is willing to do. As most of you know, we have a program in schools called the I Can course. I talk about it at the drop of a hat. As a matter of fact, even whether you wear a hat or not, I talk about the I Can course. We talk about this very thing called attitude. We talk about honesty, character, and integrity. And let me give you just a basic thought as we weave them together about attitude. See, teenage unemployment is incredibly high. As a matter of fact, national unemployment is high. But let's say we've got a 16-year-old youngster who's been taught the principles which we teach in ICANN, and it's now being taught from kindergarten all the way through college. And we've got this youngster who applies for the job. He's age 16, and the employer said, "What experience have you had?" If the youngster says, "I've had 16 years experience in telling the truth, 16 years experience in being enthusiastic, 16 years experience in building a winning attitude, 16 years experience in knowing that the only way you're going to be able to keep me on the payroll is for you to make a profit. And therefore, knowing that if I don't contribute to your profit, that you're not going to be able to pay me, and I've got 16 years experience, therefore, of doing more than I'm paid to do, so you'll have the profit to pay me. I've had 16 years experience in developing the kind of attitude which says that you can get everything in life you want if you'll just help enough other people get what they want. You know what? I believe unemployment is a solvable problem. I believe we can have these kids working if we start teaching them the very basic things. And attitude is one of the basic things. I did a study at Harvard University several years ago. Discovered that 85% of the reason people get jobs and get ahead in those jobs is because they have the right mental attitude. But they discovered something else in that study. They discovered that in our educational institutions in America, that 90% of our time and educational dollars are spent teaching facts, figures, and formulas, and 10% of our educational time and dollars are spent teaching how to build a winning attitude. But they said, hold the phone, that's misleading. Because of that 10% time they spend, 99% of that is spent with the athlete and the athletic event. The band, the parade, the cheerleaders, the assemblies, the articles in the school paper, the banners, and all of those things. And the average student in our American educational institutions today, the average student has less than 1% of their time and educational dollars directed at building the right mental attitude. It's the little things that make the difference. And attitude is one of those differences. A number of years ago, during the 1930s, when minor league baseball was tremendously powerful and popular, the San Antonio team had a manager named O'Reilly, and he was one of the smarts in the game. His team, the year before, had 7 players who hit over 300. And therefore, everybody knew that San Antonio would win the pennant. No question about it. Hands down, they would win that pennant. But they lost the first game and the second and the third and the fourth on their way to the pennant. As a matter of fact, the pitcher was blaming the catcher, who was blaming the shortstop, who was blaming the outfielders, who was blaming the first baseman. Everybody was blaming everybody else. At the end of 21 games, they had lost 18 of those 21 games. They were playing Dallas, one of the weakest hitting teams in the league, and they were beaten 1-0. A scratch single by the pitcher is the only hit that San Antonio was able to get. And now they're going to play the second game in the series. At that time, there was a faith healer there, a man named Slater, who they said could work miracles. And O'Reilly knew that his team was just suffering from a bad case of stinking thinking. He knew all they really needed was a good little checkup from the neck up. So about an hour before the game, he ran into the clubhouse. He took a wheelbarrow and said to each of the players, give me your 2 best bats. He loaded those bats in his wheelbarrow and said, I'll be back just before game time. Don't worry about a thing, fellas. We're going to win the game today. We're going to win the pennant. He was really excited. He came back about 5 minutes before game time and he said, fellas, I got the greatest news ever. I've taken these bats to Mr. Slater. He's put his blessings on them. He tells me that all we got to do is step up to the plate, rear back, and take that cut. He says, we're going to win the game. And he says, we're going to win the pennant. He said, man alive, all you got to do is believe you're going to hit that ball, step up, and you're going to knock it out of there. Now remember, the day before they'd been beaten 1-0. Their only hit was a scratch single. But today, same two teams on the same field, everything else being equal, today they got 37 base hits. They scored 22 runs, 11 home runs. I don't think I need to tell you, but they did win the game. As a matter of fact, they went on to win the pennant by the biggest margin in minor league history. Now, what I'm really saying here is that your attitude makes the difference. But ladies and gentlemen, there are some things that we need to understand. We live in a world which often is negative. We live in a cat-kicking world. Some of you might have remembered Mr. B. Mr. B called a meeting one day for all of his people. He said, now, I notice some of you come to work late. I notice some of you leave early. And maybe that's my fault. Maybe I've not set for you the kind of an example that I should have been setting. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to start coming to work early. I'm going to start leaving late. I'm going to start providing you with the kind of leadership which will enable us to build the kind of company we need to have. We're going to be a giant in this industry. Oh, it was quite a little speech, and his intentions were good. You see, Mr. B was really excited and his intentions were good, but about a week later, he was out at the country club, became engrossed in a conversation, forgot about the time. All of a sudden, he looked at his watch. He said, oh my goodness, I'm due back at the office right now. He hopped up, made a mad dash to his car, hopped in, scratched off, burned rubber, doing about 90 miles an hour down the freeway, and the long arm of the law came along and gave him a ticket. Are you talking about a man who was upset? Mr. B was absolutely furious. He said, this is ridiculous. Here I am, a peaceful, taxpaying, law-abiding citizen, minding my business, and what does this dude do? He comes along and gives me a ticket. What he ought to be doing now is out looking for robbers and murderers and arsonists and leave us peaceful, taxpaying citizens alone. Oh, he was really upset. When he got back to the office, he was about an hour late. And he did what management has done since the beginning of time. Every time they get their hand caught in the cookie jar, they always say, look yonder. And then nobody looks here. In a very loud voice, he called his sales manager and he said, come on in, I want to talk to you about the Armstrong account. You've been fitting with that thing 6 weeks. You could have closed the deal a dozen times. Just come on in and tell me either yes, you did get it, or no, you did not get it. Oh, he was really upset. Sales manager quietly came in, closed the door behind him, ducked his head and said, Mr. B, I hate to tell you this, but he said, I lost that deal. He said, I thought I had it. I thought it was sold, but something happened and it came unglued. And if you think Mr. B was upset before, you should have seen him now. He literally hit the ceiling. He said, this is ridiculous. Why, for 18 years you've been my sales manager. For 18 years I've been depending on you to bring in new business. And now we have a chance to get the biggest account of all. And what do? You blow it. Well, let me tell you something, friend. Just because you've been here 18 years doesn't mean you got a lifetime contract. Now you're going to replace that business or I'm going to replace you. Oh, he was really upset. But if you think he is upset, you should have seen that sales manager. He goes storming out of there, slammed the door behind him, stomping his feet, muttering under his breath, this is ridiculous. Why, for 18 years I've been running this company. As a matter of fact, I'm the only man who ever brings in a new business in. If it wasn't for me, the company had gone down the tube 15 years ago. And now just because I missed one lousy sale, he uses a cheap trick, he threatens to fire me. This is ridiculous. Oh, he was upset. He called his secretary in. He said, those 5 letters I gave you this morning, did you get them out yet? Are you going to give me some lousy excuse about you having something else to do? She said, don't you remember? You told me that the heat account took precedence over everything else. That's what I've been working on. He said, don't give me lousy excuses. I told you I wanted those letters out, and I want them out today. And if you can't get them out, I'll get me somebody who can. Oh, he was really upset. But if you think he is upset, you should have seen that secretary. She goes storming out of there, slammed the door behind her back, muttering under her breath, this is really ridiculous. Why, I'm the only one who ever really gets any work done around here. I do more than any 3 people on the payroll. I've been his secretary 11 years. If it hadn't been for me, this company had gone broke years ago, and him threatening to fire me, as much as I know about him, who does he think he's kidding anyhow? Oh, she was upset. She went out to the switchboard operator and said, I got 5 letters. I want you to get them out. Now, I know that ordinarily you don't do this, but you don't do anything else anyhow but sit out here and occasionally answer the telephone and get out a little work when need be. And I want these letters out, and I'm going to tell you right now, if you can't get them out, I'll get me somebody who can. Oh, I tell you, she was upset. But if you think she's upset, you should have seen that switchboard operator. She said, this is ridiculous. They don't do anything in the bank but gossip, drink coffee, talk on the telephone. Every once in a while, I get a little work out. And the minute they get behind, they come out here to throw it on my desk and say, now you're going to get it out or I'm going to fire you. And I'm already doing more than the 3 people here. As a matter of fact, it hadn't been me that had gone under years ago. This is not fair. Oh, she was really upset. But she got the letters out. Got home, she was still furious. She walked in, slammed the door behind her back, walked in the den, and the first thing she saw was her 11-year-old boy laying there on the floor watching television. Second thing she saw was a big rip right across the seat of his britches. She said, son, how many times do I have to tell you? When you come home from school, put your play clothes on. Mother has a hard enough time that is supporting you and sending you through school. Now, because you've disobeyed me, you're going to go upstairs right now. Going to be no supper tonight, no television for the next 3 weeks. Oh, she was really upset. But if you think she's upset, you should have seen that little boy. He hopped up, muttering under his breath, this is terrible. Well, I was doing something for my own mother. It was an accident. Could have happened to anybody. And she doesn't even give me a chance to explain it all. He was upset. And about that time, his tomcat walked right in front of him, which was a mistake. Little boy gives him a big old kick and says, you get out of here. You've probably been up to some no good yourself. Now, folks, if you think about it for a moment, that tomcat was the only creature involved who could not have altered that series of events. And if you think about it for another minute, wouldn't it have been so much better if Mr. B had just gone directly from the country club to that switchboard operator's house and kicked that cat himself? You see, the truth of the matter is we live in a negative cat-kicking world. And people are always doing it. You ever go in a restaurant and sit down for a cup of coffee? And you sit there, and you sit there, and you sit there. And finally, you say to the waitress, "Miss, could I have a cup of coffee?" And she jumps down your throat. "Can't you see I'm busy? I'll get to you as quick as I can. Do you stay with me? Don't have to bite my head off about it, do you?" I mean, do you let her pull you down to her level? Or can you understand it's got nothing to do with you? Somebody had just stopped by and kicked her cat long before you got there. You ever get caught? You ever get caught in the traffic jam? Traffic 3 blocks in front of you, traffic 3 blocks behind you, and some dude right behind you sits on his horn, and you turn around, "Can't you see we got traffic up in front of us?" I mean, do you understand it's got nothing to do with you? Somebody has been kicking his cat all day long, but are you going to let him pull you down to his level? You ever go home after a magnificent day? I mean, everything has just gone beautifully. You've sold everybody you've called on. Or you had a fantastic day working down at the office or teaching the class or serving as an MD or whatever it is that you do. Everything has gone well and you come in whistling and singing, "Hi, honey, how you doing? What do you mean what I'm doing? You told me you're going to be home an hour ago. If you've been putting up with, I've been putting up with all day long, you wouldn't be feeling so good either. Now, where have you been? What have you been doing?" Can you understand it's got nothing to do with you? Somebody's been kicking your cat all day long. I want you to think about this for a moment. The bum on the Bowery and the mayor of your city have got a lot in common. The bum on the Bowery and the mother of the year have got a lot in common. The bum on the Bowery and the most successful, happy individual you'll ever meet in your life have got a lot in common. Every human being alive suffers disappointments, defeats, frustrations, and setbacks all of their life. But the difference is the way they react to those disappointments and defeats and setbacks. There is your difference. You see, the truth of the matter is, a lot of people go around letting an awful lot of other people kick their cats. But what I'm saying to you is that, you see, not only will you let them kick your cat, if you're not powerful, careful, you'll let them steal your dream. You're what you are. You are where you are because of what's gone into your mind. You cannot rise above your words. Let me say that again. You cannot rise above your words. A lot of people say what you mean. I'm going to tell you to say what you want. See, a lot of people use vile, filthy, pornographic language. And the thing that distresses me about that are not the words, as a lot of people say. They're just words. But you see, all of those words paint pictures, and they reveal the internal thinking of the person who is inside. Whatever you learn, you're going to learn it consciously. But if you're going to do it well, you must do it subconsciously. How many of you know how to type? How many of you remember the typing process you went through? R-F-U-J, R-F-U-J, you know. Oh, you went over and over and over and over, and you didn't go very fast. But it wasn't long when you learned that keyboard. You just sit down, you subconsciously, you instinctively typed it out. How many of you learned how to drive a car with a stick shift, you know, a clutch and all those good things? You remember when you learned how the instructions went, you know, you'd say to yourself, now you mash in the clutch, now you shift the gear, now you feed the accelerator, now you let out on the clutch. Look out, honey, look out! You know, you're in danger of running over somebody, backing up on the curb. How many of you remember how ridiculous you felt as you were trying to learn the car, at the bucks and the jumps and the number of times you killed the engine, you know, and whoever was teaching you how to drive really got all nervous and upset. And then a few weeks later, after you'd really learned how to drive, you had moved it over into the subconscious then, you know, and now you mash the clutch, you shift the gear, you feed the accelerator, you let out on the clutch, you roll down the car, you light a cigarette, throw out the match, and talk about your neighbor. All at the same time, because now you've moved it from the conscious over into the subconscious. Well, ladies and gentlemen, the exciting thing is that you can learn all things in the same way. You can teach moral values to your children the same way. Psychologist Robert Cole says that's our most important responsibility as parents, is to teach them moral values. You can learn about optimism and hope and courtesy. Every once in a while I get into some rather intriguing discussions with some of my egghead friends about this thing called motivation. And we sit around, you know, and a lot of them are kind of individuals, you know, they call themselves deep thinkers. And they make this profound statement that all motivation is self-motivation. Well, at the risk of offending some of them, let me give you a little analogy which leads me to believe that maybe outside forces can have some impact in our lives. I've got a beautiful fireplace at home. What I really love to do is on Sunday afternoon, you know, after I come home from church and we've had a nice lunch, and before I start preparing for our evening seminar down at the church, I get me a good fire going if it's a good cold, rainy day, you know, and I get me a good fire going, turn the TV on, and when the Cowboys run the score up to about 61-0, you know, I kind of lose interest and I drop off to sleep, you know, and a lot of times when I awake and I look over to that fireplace and the fire has gone out. So I sleepily get up and I go there, you know, and I take my poker and I poke and I punch and I poke and I punch, you know, and the first thing you know, I've got a rip-roaring fire going again. How many of you have ever had a similar experience? Can I see your hand? Now see, ladies and gentlemen, what happened was a very simple thing. When that fire had gone out, all I did when I poked and punched was I created some activity, which creates a partial vacuum right there, which nature abhors. Now cold, fresh air is blown in from the rest of the room, and the oxygen in that fresh air is what ignites the fire. See, I happen to believe that all of us from time to time need a little poking and punching, and we need some action from an outside source. We need some fresh air. We need some new input into our minds. Now, there are three kinds of motivation that I want to look at. First kind is fear motivation. And fear motivation is when you say to your child, if you're not in by 10 o'clock tonight, this is the last night you'll go out this month. Fear motivation says if you don't clean up your room, you're not going to get the family car over the weekend. Fear motivation says if you're late one more time, that's the end of your job. Fear motivation on some occasions is effective, but it is not a permanent type of motivation. Then there's the second kind, which is incentive motivation. Incentive motivation says if you lead the parade, if you're number one salesperson, if you raise productivity 3%, if you do a certain job, then you're going to win the trip to Hawaii or Yazoo City or some other place. That's incentive motivation. I think most of us have seen the picture of the donkey. You know, the donkey is pulling the cart, and in front of the donkey, they've got the carrot dangling, you know, right there in front of him. Now, incentive motivation will work if the stick is short enough, the carrot is sweet enough, the load is light enough, and the donkey is hungry enough. The third kind of motivation, you see, is growth motivation. Now, the problem, you see, with just incentive motivation is this. Eventually, you're going to have to let that donkey take a bite of that carrot. And if the donkey bites the carrot, then that solves his appetite problem. He's no longer hungry. So to get him to pull again, you got to lighten the load and sweeten the carrot. But the problem there is eventually you got a profit and loss situation. And when the profits are gone, then the business goes under. We're seeing that in our automotive industry right now, are we not? There was too much cost and not enough profit. And the net result is everybody's in trouble. So let's look, if you will, at that third kind of motivation, which is called growth motivation. Now, I'm not going to be negative at this time. I'll be like the little boy who came home from school one day and said, "Dad, I'm afraid I flunked the arithmetic test." His dad said, "Son, that's negative. Be positive." He said, "Dad, I'm positive I flunked the arithmetic test." I'm not going to be negative when I say this. I am going to be absolutely positive when I say to you that there are going to be some difficulties in your life ahead. You're going to sponsor somebody and know they're going to be the greatest, and they're never going to leave the house. You're going to, in your business, have some disappointments, some defeats, some setbacks, some frustrations, and that's just a fact of life. Those things happen every day. Now what we want to do is learn how to prepare in advance for any difficulty, so instead of a stopping stone, it becomes a stepping stone. Now if we're going to have the right kind of attitude, then we've got to prepare in advance for it. So let me ask you a question. If you knew about a disease that was responsible for putting more people on the unemployment rolls, ending a lot of people's marriages, putting more people on welfare, breaking up a lot of otherwise good friendships, creating more disturbances and disasters in our country, this disease does more of all of those things than all other diseases combined. I know without asking you, you would say that's a pretty serious disease. Well, let me ask you a question. If I were to say to you, there is something you can do about that disease, and it's the simple formula that all you got to do is follow it, and you got a cure for the disease, how many of you would say it would be a foolish person who had the disease or was in danger of contracting it who would be unwilling to take the necessary inoculation or follow the procedure? Wouldn't that be a foolish thing not to do something about it? Well, the disease I'm talking about is called stinking thinking. That's a preliminary disease. It leads to hardening of the attitudes, which is America's most deadly disease. There's no question about it. And there is a formula which would enable you to eliminate that stinking thinking and completely avoid hardening of the attitudes and acquire the health and the wealth and the happiness which are available in our country today. And what I'm going to do is say that it also offers peace of mind and friends and personal growth, and it simply involves a simple formula. Now, I'm going to share this formula with you because I know it's a formula which absolutely will work. And the first step that in this formula that you got to follow is you've got to reverse the way you get up. Now, I did not say get out of bed backwards. I said reverse the way you get up. But how do most people get out of bed every day? When that opportunity clock sounds off in the morning, you know, they reach over and they shut it off. And a typical procedure is kind of like this. They slap their face a time or two, and they say, "Hon, is it time to get up already?" Oh, boy, it seemed like we just lay down. Boy, we got to get to bed earlier tonight, I guarantee you. They start every day like it's going to be another yesterday. And they were not overly excited about yesterday. The net result is they end up with a bad case of stinking thinking. But what you want to do, step number one, is simply this. Tomorrow morning, if you're serious about getting the most out of life, when that opportunity clock goes off, you reach over and you shut it off. Now, I think that's important. Then you sit straight up on the side of your bed. You see, when that opportunity clock was set, you did not decide when it sounded off the next morning to get up. You made that decision when you set the clock. Now what you're going to decide is, how am I going to get up? So when that clock sounds off, you reach over and shut it off. As I say, I do think that's very important. Then you sit straight up on the side of that bed. You slap your hands and you simply say, "Oh, boy, it's a great day to get up and get at them." Now, I want you to get the picture. There you are on the side of the bed. Your hair is hanging down in your face. You're two-thirds asleep, and you're saying, "Oh, boy, it's a great day to get up and go get them." And I guarantee if you live to be 1,000, you'll never feel any sillier than you do the first day you do that. Can you imagine? There you are sitting on the side of the bed, and I clearly understand that you're an intelligent, educated, successful man or woman, probably conservative. Maybe you might even be a senior citizen. Of course, you might be a teenager listening to this recording. You might be a doctor or a psychologist. You might be a coach. You can be anything in the world. And here I am suggesting that you act like a 7-year-old child. You better believe I'm suggesting that you do exactly that. Because you see, when you slap your hands, you are, if you think about this for a moment, you've already accomplished two things. Number one, you are up. And that's where you wanted to be when you set the clock. Number two, you've started to reach in and take control of your own mind and your own attitude. Never will forget, I had an 80-some-odd-year-old lady at one of my programs one evening, and I went through this, and she told me later, she said, "Mr. Ziegler, I thought that was the dumbest, silliest thing I'd ever heard. There you were telling me, a senior citizen who had lived all of my life and only had a few more years to go, and you were telling me that I ought to get up in the morning acting like a child, slapping my hands and saying, 'Oh boy, it's a great day.'" And as I was driving home that night, I got to laughing about that. I mean, that young man is just off his rocker. And then she said, "I don't know what happened," but she said, "I studied about it again." And she said, "Well, you know, I do live by myself." And she said, "Nobody but me would know about it." And she said, "You know, I kind of got to playing with the idea." And then she finally, instead of saying why, as most people do, she said, "Why not?" And the next morning, she said, "I set that opportunity clock, and when it sounded off, I reached over there, and I shut it off." And she said, "I sat up on the side of my bed," but she said, "Mr. Ziegler, got to confess to you, when I reared back to slap him, I couldn't do it." She said, "I was already just laughing my silly head off. The very idea." And she said, "You know, an amazing thing happened. I bet I thought about that 19 times during the course of the day." And she said, "Every time I thought about it, I got tickled. Net result, good day." See, a good minute is a miniature hour. An hour is a miniature day. A day is a miniature lifetime. And the way you get up in the morning plays a big part in how you go up in life. And I want you to think about this with me just for a moment as we talk about this. You see, in the game of life, when you sow an action, you reap a habit. When you sow a habit, you reap a character. And when you reap a character, you reap a destiny. And I want you to think about this with me. Every good habit known to man, whether it's losing weight, every good habit, whether it's stopping drinking or whatever it is, or tithing to your church, or being pleasant to your mate and your children, every good habit you got to reach up and grab and hang on to for dear life. Every bad habit which you acquire, whether it's obesity, profanity, promiscuity, homosexuality, whatever it is, if it is a destructive habit, you will acquire it slowly and gradually. And before you know, you got the habit. The habit has got you.
Now, please turn the cassette over to continue.
I've never known a person to start out to become a drug addict or an alcoholic. When I started my research on this 8 years ago, one person in 14 who took an occasional drink became an alcoholic. Today, one person in 9 who is a social drinker will become an alcoholic. And one of the reasons is because 2.5 times every hour, not counting the advertisements on television, 2.5 times every hour, drinking is glamorized in front of us on that television. And when I talk about getting up in the morning and slapping your hands, I'm really talking about grabbing hold of a good habit. And what I'm saying to you is that it will make a difference, and it will make a profound difference right there. When you do it 21 consecutive days, it will become a habit. And I can guarantee you, you will never have a day when you do this that you won't think about it a dozen times or 20 or 30 times during the day. And you can't think about it without smiling. You just can't. And the mind is an associating machine. It triggers one thing, then it triggers another, and it triggers another. And you scripturally are accurate when you get up saying it is a great day, because the good book says this is the day which the Lord hath made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. All over America, ladies and gentlemen, we've got literally millions of these electrical appliances hanging down on the street corners. Now, some people call them red lights, some call them stop lights. Every once in a while, we have some person who claims to be an realist, which in most cases is just a lousy excuse for being negative. We've got a sign in my office, in our office, in the receptionist desk, and it says, "We're realists around here. We expect a miracle every day." Now, a lot of these realists call those lights, they call them traffic lights. But in the future, what we're going to understand is we got to change their names. You see, the average American spends 27 hours every year in front of those lights. Now, I know none of you folks would dream of doing a thing like this, but let me ask you, have you ever pulled up next to one of those lights or in front of one of those lights to wait on it so it would have the right color so you could go ahead? And as you pull up in front of it, you know, you look over to your left and you can't believe it. There's some dude sitting over there and he's got his hands firmly gripped on that steering wheel. I mean, he doesn't want that car to go anywhere. And he's got his mouth all tightened up, you know, just in case he has to talk to that light. And then after a minute or two, you watch him and he starts pressing the accelerator, race the engine. Because you see, he understands that if he races the engine, it's going to change the color of the light up there. How many of you actually have ever seen some dumb bunny doing a thing like that? Can I see your hands, please? Now, folks, let me ask you a question. When I say dumb bunny, I'm afraid I'm talking about everybody in existence at one time or another, but I'm talking about your past, and I'm talking about my past. Now, you think about it for a moment. If you think it's wild and way out to slap your hands when you get up in the morning, what do you think it is to race the engine to change the color of that light? Now, that's crazy, because you're not going to change the color of that light with your engine. What you do want to do, though, is when you pull up to that light, you want to personalize it, you want to look up at it, and you want to visualize your name being on it. And you want to say, well, look at there. That light's got my name on it, and it's put there so I can go further and faster and more smoothly and more safely to my destination. You see, the truth of the matter, it is a go light. So the next time somebody asks you directions, don't do like the average Joe on the street does. You know, they send you down to the red light or the stoplight. When somebody asks you how to go somewhere, you say you go down to the second go light. When you just withdraw things from the game of life, you're always going to be afraid there's not going to be enough for you, and the net result is you end up being enormously pessimistic. Step number three, you need to change the way you say hello. You see, too many people in our society today don't even know how to say hello, whether it's in person or on the telephone. You know, you ask somebody, how you doing? They say, not too bad. How you doing? Fine so far. How you doing? Great since it's payday, or great since I'm on vacation, or great since I get off in 30 minutes. And don't you love it when you say to somebody, how you doing, and they pull themselves up to their height and say, well, under the circumstances. Makes you wonder what in the world they're doing under there in the first place, doesn't it? Now, much of your attitude has to do with the way you exchange greetings, the way you say hello. A lot of times people say what you mean, and I repeat myself, I'm going to tell you to say what you want. I think that's important. Most people, as you know, answer the telephone as if it were an intrusion. What do you mean dialing that number? I wasn't bothering you. Hello. And they snatch their phone off the hook. If it's a place of business, I challenge you, wherever you live, when you go back home, get out the yellow pages, look up 10 numbers, ask a friend of yours or an associate to dial those 10 numbers, and I'll guarantee you they will be unable to identify more than three of them based on the way they answer the telephone. They pick the telephone, they're going to write a company, and you don't have any more idea than a goat who you've called. I believe that the best money you can spend would be to dial my number in Dallas, Texas, and learn how to answer the telephone. Now, I've got an 800 number, but it'll do you a lot more good if you go ahead and spend your own dollar and call up there. So I ain't going to give you the 800 number, but it's 214-233-9191, and you dial our number just to learn how to answer the telephone. And our lady says, good morning. And you flat, no, it's a good morning. Then she makes a motivational speech. Now, it's not as long as the one I make, rather obviously, but she makes a motivational speech. She says, it's a great day. A lot of times people say, Ziggy, is it always a great day? It sure is. And if you don't believe it, you just try missing one of them. Then she gives the name of the company. Now, when I'm at home, and I do stress this is at home, I answer the telephone singing, oh, good morning to you. And I'll be the first to admit sometimes there's a long pause.
And then I say, if you don't speak up, I'm going to hang up. A lot of times they say, who is this? I said, whoever you want. Who do you want? Man, you sure do feel good today. And I said, yes, many years ago I decided I was going to feel good today. 98% of the way you feel is determined by the decision you make as to how you're going to feel. And I'm going to get into that in just a moment. See, a lot of people decide they're going to feel bad and they end up not disappointed. Whatever you plant in your mind and project is what's going to happen in your life. The problem is most people plant what they don't want. We were doing some filming in Dallas a few months ago. We took a break and when we came back, a little lady sitting on the front row had a soft drink, and we'd ask everybody to put everything out of sight because those cameras do pick up everything. And as she slipped her soft drink up under her chair, she said, now watch me spill this. Did she want to spill it? Uh-uh. Was she planning to spill it? That's exactly right. You ever notice you see to somebody, well, I see you got a fresh case of the sniffles.
Yeah, but it don't really get bad till the third day. That's when it kills me.
They are programming themselves, you see, for those things. A lot of times I'll answer the telephone and I'll just pick it up and say, howdy, howdy, howdy. Or I might pick up the telephone and say, good morning, this is Gene Ziegler's husband. Now, we forget one Sunday afternoon, I picked up the telephone, I said, good afternoon, this is Tom Ziegler's dad. Little Sam Wing from down the street was taken somewhat aback, and he said, Tom there? I said, he sure is. He said, can I speak to him? I said, of course, Tom. No, Sam thought I laid the telephone down. He turned to his mother and he said, boy, they've sure got a weird way of answering the telephone. But I noticed for the next 2 or 3 months, every time I'd pull that car in the driveway, 2 minutes later, the telephone would be ringing. Old Sam would be at the other end. He'd say, is Tom there? Is Tom there? He didn't want to talk to Tom. He wanted to hear me answer the telephone. And you might say, okay, Ziegler, so what? Here's the so what. I've been working with kids on drugs over 10 years. I've been involved in our ICANN course in the school for 7 years. I can tell you with as much certainty as I can tell you anything in life, when your child is between the ages of 9 and 15, when they need you the most, they're the least comfortable in your presence. At this particular time, when they're going through more psychological and physiological changes than at any time in their life, when they're bombarded with peer group pressure, sex pressure, drug pressure, when they are confronted with more difficulties in their life than they ever will be confronted with, maybe again, and they're the least qualified to deal with it, when they desperately need a mother or a daddy or both to put their arms around them and love them and talk with them, mother and dad and child are the least comfortable talking about life's most significant things. I will say that one of the tragedies is that we don't have enough people who are willing to tough things out. I don't think life is easy. I think it's tough. But I'm convinced beyond any reasonable doubt that if we'll be just a little tougher on ourselves, that life will be considerably easier on ourselves. And when we start showing that affection I was talking about to that child, we're going to keep them at home. We're going to start teaching them more of the good things in life. Answer the telephone properly. And when somebody says to you, how you doing? Instead of giving that old baloney about fine since it's Friday or great since it's payday, when somebody asks you how you doing, just rear back, belt it out, be completely honest, tell the truth, say super good, but I'll get better. Are fantastic, and it's improving. And you might say, well, now, wait a minute, Ziegler. Daggone it all, suppose I'm not doing super good or fantastic. Am I telling the truth? Why, certainly you're telling the truth. You're just telling it in advance, that's all. Why wait for the good stuff? And then when you start to part company, instead of some mundane thing like, well, so long, or good day, or see you later, or, you know, have a nice day is a dramatic improvement, well, why not just reach for the best as you start to part company with them? Why don't you just say, see you at the top? Logic will not change an emotion. But action will. get up in the morning, when you first get up, slap your hands, you don't really feel like doing that. Logically, it shouldn't work, but I can guarantee it. All you got to do is try it. It'll work. When you start answering the telephone and responding super good, I can absolutely guarantee you it absolutely will work. So step number three, change the way you say hello. Step number four, set your gyroscope. I don't know how many of you watched Candid Camera several years ago, a lot of years ago. But I believe it was Dorothy Collins who was on. She had a suitcase in the cart of an office building, and there was a gyroscope in it which was set to go straight ahead. It was very heavy, and some dude would be walking down the cart, and Dorothy would say, "Sir, would you mind picking up that suitcase and taking it into the office for me? It's too heavy for me." And the dude would smile, and he'd reach down, he'd pick up that suitcase, and he'd start walking down toward the office. But when he'd start to turn left, to go in that office, he could turn left all he wanted to, but that gyroscope was set to go straight ahead, and it bitterly resisted any kind of turn. I tell the story because inside of every creature on the face of this earth, there's a built-in gyroscope. A duck who's never survived the winter, if he were left all to himself, when the winter approaches, that duck would automatically start flying south. There's something built in called the law of self-preservation. Take a young squirrel 1,000 miles from all other squirrels. As winter approaches, that young squirrel, if left entirely alone, would start storing nuts for the winter. There's a law. It's called the law of self-preservation. But you see, there's a difference. The duck and the squirrel had no choice. Man is entirely different. Go out to the seashore, to the lakeshore. You watch the sailing boats sail. There are 1,000 sailing boats out there. They're going in 360 different directions, but the wind is blowing in only one direction. Then how can they go in 360 different directions? Very simple. The person, the human being, the man or the woman on that boat has set the sails. It's the set of the sails that determines the direction of the boat. I fervently believe that as a result of what we're talking about here, that you can set those sails in the right directions. I believe that you can set your gyroscope with one simple process anytime you're on the telephone. We need to start conditioning our thinking in the proper way. And as you're talking, instead of doing the doodling, you know how some people do, they will draw a circle, you know, then they'll put a square in the circle, then a rectangle in the square, then a triangle in the rectangle in the square in the circle, and then they'll start putting a little lattice work in there, then they'll start doing the shading. Oh, some of them get pretty good at it, but what is the going price of doodles in your hometown? I'm convinced the doodle market is fairly limited, so why not, instead of doodling, as you're talking, write down, "I can, I can, I can, I can." And then as you wind up the conversation, put, "I can and I will," and then write out whatever your immediate goal is for the moment. Step number four is set your gyroscope. Step number five, feed your mind. You know, it's an interesting fact. Most of us eat 3 times a day. As a matter of fact, I've noticed that when somebody misses a meal, they make a big deal out of it. They say, "You know, I was just so busy, I didn't even have time to eat my lunch today." I said, "Man, pay attention. I didn't have time to eat lunch." I mean, that was a big deal. A lot of times I'll ask people, "When is the last time you deliberately, on a regular schedule, fed your mind? The good, the clean, the pure, the powerful, and the positive. For the 50th time, you're what you are, you're where you are because of what's gone into your mind. You change what you are, you change where you are by changing what goes into your mind. The tragedy is, if I were to come into your home with a pail of garbage and throw it on your living room floor, we'd have serious trouble quickly. One of three things. You'd either whip me physically, or you'd call the law and have me arrested, or you'd get your gun and you'd say, "Now, Ziegler, I'll bet you could just clean that up." And I'll bet you I could too. Yet you'd be terribly upset. You'd be telling people for months about that fellow that came in my home and threw a pail of garbage on it. Why, I started to shoot him. As a matter of fact, I wish I had, the very idea. Oh, we'd be upset if I threw garbage on your living room floor. And yet we daily permit, even encourage, other people to dump garbage in our minds. Negative, low-ceiling, immoral things go in their minds each day. I don't know if you've ever read the story of Shinichi Suzuki. I think you have. I'm going to talk about feeding your mind now primarily with the cassette player. I'm going to make a bold statement. I used to say I wouldn't take $10,000 for mine if I couldn't replace it. Later, I said I wouldn't take $25,000 for my cassette player if I couldn't replace it. Later, I said $50,000. Today, with inflation and all what it is, I'm going to make a flat statement. I wouldn't take $100,000 for my cassette player if I could not replace it. I think it's the most exciting, most motivational thing, really, that's come down the pike. As a developer of attitudes and educational concepts, it has, in my mind, no equal. How many of you recognize the name Shinichi Suzuki? Can I see your hands? Suzuki is a Japanese scientist. He teaches music to Japanese children. His methods are now being used widely and have for a number of years here in the States. He takes a Japanese child who's just 6 weeks old, and he puts the cassette player by the bed, and the child listens to the music for a month, same song. Next month, another song. Next month, another song. Next month, another song. By the time the child is 2 years old, he puts a miniature violin in the crib so the child might get the feel of the instrument. At age 2 and a half, the child watches its mother take violin lessons. By the time it's 3, the child is practicing on that miniature violin about 1/5 the standard size. By the time the child is 5 years old, it's playing beautiful music. Held a concert. Average age of the child, less than 8 years old. There were 1,500 of those Japanese children there. They were not playing Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star or Mary Had a Little Lamb. They were playing Vivaldi. They were playing the classics. But here is the beautiful thing. According to Suzuki, virtually none of those children had any, quote, natural musical ability. It was a learned skill. To me, that's exciting. What it really says is, you can change what you are. You can change where you are by changing what goes into your mind. A few months ago, I met a lady in Dallas. Her name is Mrs. Ernest Lantos. Mrs. Lantos, not too long ago, her first name is Pam, was staying in her bed all day long, every day. She was 5'3.5" tall. She weighed 155 pounds. Life offered nothing for her. She got a set of tapes, like we're now talking about and recording, on how to stay motivated. And she started listening to those tapes. And she was listening to the radio one day, and she heard about a company, a radio station just opened, and she loved the format. And her attitude was so much better, and her weight was back to where it ought to be, and her outlook on life was dramatically different. She went down to the radio station. She applied for the job, and they said, Pam, we don't have an opening for a sales lady. Well, Pam's hard of hearing. So she sat down and sat there all day long. The next morning, she came back and applied for the job, and her hearing still had not improved. When they told her there was no job for a sales lady, she sat there all day long. When she went back the third day, they saw how determined she was, and this time they said, we do have a job for a sales lady, and her hearing dramatically improved. She didn't hear no. She listened, though. She heard what she wanted to say. In a few weeks, she became the number one sales lady. Later, she became the sales manager. Productivity is 400% higher than it was before. They now have her going all over the United States teaching other people exactly the same principles with dramatic results. You are what you are. You're where you are because of what's gone into your mind. I'm going to beat you to death with it. You might as well go ahead and finish the phrase. You can change what you are. You can change where you are by changing what goes into your mind. Mr. Wallace Johnson, co-founder of Holiday Inns International, a man over 70 years old, told me that he reads 2 good motivational books a month. He listens to motivational recordings every day. W. Clement Stone, I don't know how much he's worth, but he's given away well over $100 million, has told me that he listens and reads every day in his life. Mary Kay Ash told me that before she cranks her car, every day she cranks up her cassette player. Eric Gerner, Senior Vice President, Holiday Inns International, listens every day. Eric Gerner, incidentally, told me that when he went through our 4-day school in Dallas, that although he finished only the 5th grade, he's gotten his education by reading these books and listening to these tapes. Alan Bean, the man who's now in charge of the astronauts, one of the men who walked on the moon, said to me that as the astronauts were on the way to the moon and back, and as they were on the space platform going round and round, they were listening to motivational recordings. And I'm pleased to be able to say to you that some of the recordings they were listening to were fantastic. You need to feed your mind. Step number six, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to build a winning attitude, you've got to get involved in an exercise program. You see, man is mental, he's physical, and he's spiritual. Let me quickly tell you why an exercise program is so critically important. The mental and the physical do go together. When you exercise, see, at the end of the day, a lot of times people are tired and tense. You can either stomp your feet and kick the doors in and slam things around and otherwise act like a spoiled five-year-old. Or you can take a couple of drinks or a couple of tranquilizers and otherwise figure out ways for self-destruction. Or according to Dr. Cooper, you can exercise. When you exercise, you activate the pituitary gland. The pituitary gland then literally floods the system with endorphins. Endorphins are 200 times more powerful than morphine. And as you flood that system with those endorphins, you literally get on a natural chemical high. That's what happens. I cannot begin to tell you what it has meant to me since I've been on an exercise program. How much more energy I've got. How much more vitality is there. All of the good things which go along with it. I'm going to say to you that if you will put on a little exercise program and exercise just before you conduct a meeting, you're going to have a better meeting. The creativity really goes up. Most people are familiar with a cancer drug called interferon. Now, interferon is a relatively expensive drug, but there's a source of interferon, and incidentally, Dr. Kozek believes that interferon is going to represent a real breakthrough. They're playing it pretty cool so far because there have been disappointments in the past. But interferon has another source. That's your white corpuscles. How do you smooth talk your white corpuscles into producing interferon? Would you believe positive thinking? That's right. All you got to do is feed the good, the clean, the pure, the powerful, the optimistic into the mind and the body will do some amazing things. Everybody here knows about the placebo. How you can take this control group and give them the real drug and this control group and give them placebo, and the people who get the placebo have remarkable improvement as well. And the reason is very simple. The mind is fooled. And you're told and you're thinking, boy, this is doing me some good. Boy, this is good for me. Boy, this is good for me. And the astonishing thing is the mind then produces the substance which renders a lot of good. A healthy body, ladies and gentlemen, makes for a more alert mind, and a positive mind makes for a healthier body. Two books I would urge you to read, The Anatomy of an Illness by Norman Cousins, give you some dramatic information on it, and Behavioral Kinesiology by Dr. John Diamond will be enormously helpful. Number six, then, is get on a good exercise program, and you can do a lot for your mental attitude. Step number seven, I started to say finally, but you know when us Baptists say finally, that don't necessarily mean immediately, but it does mean we're getting powerful close. Step number seven is this. Be still and listen. We're in a helter-skelter world. We're in a world where everybody is go, 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 hurry, hurry, hurry. But you need those still, quiet moments even beyond that. You know, it was during those still, quiet moments that Martin Luther found the reserve and the strength to create an entirely new movement in world history. It was during those still, quiet moments that George Washington at Valley Forge found the strength to build a nation. It was during those still, quiet moments at Gethsemane that our Lord found the strength for the awful ordeal which he faced at Calvary. Yes, we do need those moments. We need them so that we might meditate and contemplate and pray and just think on all of the things which are there. We've covered a lot of material in this particular series. We've brought you seven specific steps for building a winning attitude. Let me conclude by saying this. When you do the things I've been talking about doing here, there are going to be some people who are going to criticize you. But let me remind you that since the beginning of time, nobody has ever erected a statue to a critic. Therefore, I don't think they're held in such high esteem after all. are a lot of people who are going to look at you and say, well, you're different. And, of course, they'll be right. You'll be so different, you'll be one of the five people in 100 who are getting the things out of life you want instead of having to want the things you've got. And you'll be qualifying for the whole ball game. I said it earlier in this series. I'll say it again. I don't think God loved Adam and Eve and Nicholsworth more than he does me and you. They had it all. I believe all of it's available. I believe health, wealth, and happiness are the natural results of building a life on a solid foundation and taking certain steps to get the things which are available for us. A lot of people are going to laugh at you, but let me simply say that it was the little world who will be laughing at you. The little world laughed at Robert Fulton when he went steaming by on that steamship in the Hudson River. But the big world was gathered watching him as he made that historic journey downstream. The little world laughed, but the big world was right there at Kitty Hawk, North Carolina, when the Wright brothers made that flight into space that changed not only the face of the globe, but bids to change the face of the universe. The little world laughed, but the big world was tuned in when Alexander Graham Bell made that historic phone call, which changed communications forever. The little world might laugh at you when you start on your journey, but I can absolutely guarantee you it's going to be the big world who's going to be right there at the finish cheering you across when you reach the destination which they said you could not reach. And let me remind you that what you get by reaching that destination will not be nearly so important as what you will become by reaching that destination. Thank you.
The Zig Ziglar Corporation offers a broad range of personal, family, and business development programs. If you would like a free full-color catalog, call area code 214-233-9191 or write the Zig Ziglar Corporation, 3330 Earhart, Carrollton, Texas, 75006.